Genesis chapter 42. We have a lot to cover, and I fear that most of you are not doing your chapter summaries or questions, and so I need to implore you to spend some time today and catch up. We started in chapter 30. We're now in 42, so you've got 12 chapters to have summarized and or outlined and bring questions. So I'm telling you, we've got only about 6 weeks left total. So you need to have that done. All right, chapter 42 of Genesis. Now, nothing has been said about all the different tribes of Israel since Joseph was sold into slavery. Sort of it's been bits and pieces of things happening. But since Genesis 37, a lot of things have happened. A lot of years have happened. And this is sort of just a summary of the time frame. Joseph was 17 when he was sold. And it says that he was 30 when he stood before Pharaoh in Genesis 41. So that would make him to be a slave for 10 years, then for 3 years in prison, and then 7 years are going on with plenty of food growing. And consider now that by the time of the events of chapter 42, the 7 years of plenty are history. So it's been 20 years since he was sold by his brothers, and he has not had any contact with his family. Now, when you pick up chapter 42, you actually find out that 2 years of the famine have passed before Joseph meets and then reveals himself to his brothers. So a lot of time, 20 years. What were you doing 20 years ago? Do you remember? What were you doing, Romeo?
20 years back, I was in college.
You were in college?
Training college. Degree.
Back in India?
Yeah, in India. In the friends.
Were you married at that point?
No, I was married at 32.
Now, you were married 32 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
When I was 32 years, I was married.
Yes.
Now I'm nearly
14 years old. Okay, so you weren't married 20 years ago?
Yeah.
All right. John, what were you doing 20 years ago?
I was in
primary school. No way. Primary?
I would have been 11.
Yeah. Okay. 11 years old. 20 years is a long time. What were you doing 20 years ago?
I got into World War II and was waiting to be reincarnated.
Dude, I remember we're being recorded. Don't even be foolish. Barry, what were you doing 20 years ago?
I was playing Hooter games later.
Yeah? You're 8 years old playing Pong. But here's the point. What if that was the last time you saw your family? 20 years ago. How would you react? How would they react? Especially if it was on such bad terms. So, the famine has ravaged the earth, and here's your fill-in, Canaan is not exempt. So if you got your map, you know that Egypt's down here, Canaan lands up here, the Sinai Peninsula is between them, and all over the Middle Eastern world, all over that region, there was famine. And Canaan was not exempt. Canaan was the promised land. Jacob had a large number of children, grandchildren. There were husbands and wives living with him in Canaan. The Bible tells us that 70 head back down to Egypt later on. But the idea is probably there are a lot more. There are a lot more kids and grandkids and things. Just the main people are listed. So let's go on into the lesson. Look at chapter 42, verse 1-3. Now when Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, Jacob said unto his sons, "Why do ye look one upon another?" That must have been a very... They're all just looking at each other saying, "What are we going to do? What are we going to do?" And he said, "Behold, I have heard that there is corn in Egypt. Get you down thither and buy corn for us from thence, that we may live and not die." And Joseph's 10 brethren went down to buy corn in Egypt. Now, so it kind of reminds me of when Jesus ascended to heaven. And the angel says, "Why do you stand there looking up to heaven? The same Jesus that went up is coming right back down, same way as he went up." So Jacob gives this command to his sons to quit staring at one another and go down to Egypt. And he's heard that there is plentiful grain in Egypt. And he sends 10 of his 11 sons. What son does he hold back?
Benjamin.
Benjamin, okay. Now, why would it take 10 grown men to go and get food? Think about it. They had to bring it all back. They're bringing back months worth of grain. They're going to make bread from that grain. They're going to cook and eat off the grain. They're going to plant with that grain if they're going to try. So they've got to take, you know, donkeys and pile on the food. So it's a lot. That's why he sends 10 of his sons. Now, number B, old habits die hard. Jacob still shows favoritism. Verse 4, Benjamin, Joseph's brother, Jacob sent not with his brethren, for he said, lest peradventure mischief shall befall him. So he holds back on Benjamin. So old habits die hard. Jacob still shows favoritism is your fill-in there. And Jacob still played favorites. He still favors Benjamin. Did he cause problems when he had favoritism before?
Yep.
Yes, he did. And yet he has not realized that that favoritism has caused so many problems in his sons amongst themselves. And for the past 20 years, I use the word jealousy. I'm thinking, I mean, Barry, you and Nathan have taught me a lot about the difference between jealousy and envy. But the word is envy there. Their envy was probably aimed at Benjamin since Joseph was gone. And it's kind of funny. How do we know that the envy is still going on? It's because the brothers have not repented of their evil deeds towards Joseph. They've never gotten right. So Jacob is a constant worrier. And if you're a parent, you're going to worry. But he's a constant worrier more about Benjamin than he is about anybody else. And it's a shame. It's a shame. And he's a controller. There are a lot of characteristics of Jacob that are very practical for a lot of parenting. And a parent that is constantly controlling and micromanaging their children's lives is a lot like Jacob. And they will actually cause more problems controlling their children's lives. And there's not that you don't control much of it. But as they get older, I mean, Benjamin's, he's an older kid, all right? He's probably in his 20s. So it's kind of funny that daddy's still controlling him. Hey, how would you like to have a home where all of your children are still living there? Reuben is still at home. He's married, he has children, but he can't move out on his own. Think about Jacob. He's got all of his children still all around the family table every night. Now, that may be fun, but it's not natural. So there's a good time when you do need to move out and get your own house and have your own family. So, just some things that I was thinking about, that sometimes if we're so afraid of our children getting out of our sight and they're grown up, our problem is us. The problem is not them. We've got to learn how to live by faith and not by fear. See, Joseph, and I'm calling him the Lord of Egypt for a purpose, and you'll see in a moment. He dispenses food. Look at verse 5. And the sons of Israel came to buy corn among those that came. So they line up in all this long line. For the famine was in the land of Canaan even. And Joseph was the governor over the land, and he it was that sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. Joseph saw his brethren, and he knew them. It must have been a shock. But he made himself strange unto them, and he spake roughly unto them, and said unto them, whence come ye? And they said, from the land of Canaan, to buy food. And Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew him not. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he dreamed of them, and said unto them, ye are spies, to see the nakedness of the land ye are come. You come to find out all of our problems so you can conquer us. They said unto him, Nay, my Lord, but to buy food are thy servants come. We are all one man's sons. We are true men. Thy servants are no spies. And he said unto them, Nay, but to see the nakedness of the land are ye come. And they said, thy servants are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not. Joseph said unto them, that I spake unto you, saying, ye are spies? Hereby ye shall be proved. By the life of Pharaoh, ye shall not go hence, except your youngest brother come thither. Send one of you, let him fetch your brother, and ye shall be kept, ye all, listen to him, ye all shall be kept in prison, that your words may be proved. whether there be any truth in you or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely ye are spies. And he put them all together in ward 3 days. So what does he decide? He says, well, if you have a younger brother, he'll come fetch you. You guys stay in prison until he comes get you. Now that's, what does that speak of? Irony. Remember, they sent him off and he ended up in prison, didn't he? So he, oh man. Joseph says, all right, well, if you're really true men, let's see if your brother will come catch you out. You guys are going to prison until he comes and gets you to prove that you're telling the truth. Do you think that Benjamin's ever going to come and get him? No way. Daddy will never let Benjamin out of his sight. They're going to die and rot in prison. Think about how they're feeling and think about Joseph playing this out. Joseph knows Daddy will never let Benjamin go now. So
there's a heart reaction. This is, he's just stumbled upon them in his daily work, and he hasn't had the time to just make a good decision, let's say. Or
Joseph?
Yeah. Do you think it's like a heart reaction rather than...
Well, I don't find fault with his reactions at all.
Okay.
I think he is one of the very brilliant. His troubles have actually, because he's had a right attitude, his troubles have made him wiser than anyone else in the then known world. He is the Solomon of the day. So when he sees his brother, his brothers, his mind calculates and plans out everything. Now, he's not perfect.
But did he recognize that they are his brothers?
He recognizes them. But they don't recognize him.
Oh, they don't understand.
No. Believe me, when you were if you were in Pharaoh's government, he had makeup on like a woman. He was wearing gold. He probably had that dumb fish head that went back, you know, or not fish head, but a cone. Yeah. He's walking around, and all they saw was his face, but his face would have these huge marks of mascara, and he would look like a god. So when they last saw him, he was just their brother, but now here's this man, and he's not speaking in Hebrew, is he? He's speaking in Egyptian. He's speaking Coptic. So they're using a translator, and so he's speaking out, and he's speaking roughly, so he doesn't sound like their brother. But he is calculating very quickly.
He would have been a different color than the Egyptians, wouldn't he?
But I bet you, it depends upon the region of Egypt, especially they had different people groups who were in charge of Egypt. So Pharaoh might not have been a true Egyptian. The Pharaoh... I'm guessing here, but the people of Egypt sometimes were of an inferior, in their mind, inferior race than those who were in in control. They call them the Hyksos, Hyksos dynasty. They weren't even Egyptian, so I don't know if he would have maybe lighter skin color, just like the Pharaoh. That may have been true. I don't know. But Joseph, number one, I want you to see the whole world seems to come to one man. They come to Joseph, is your fill-in, to buy food. Just as Pharaoh had predicted, Joseph is indeed the savior of the world. He didn't just create a program. He himself is conducting the program. He probably had developed an efficient method for dispensing the grain. During the years of plenty, that's why I say he's so wise. During the 7 years of plenty, during those 7 years, there were 7 years of plenty. Joseph didn't just collect grain. He prepared to dispense it. And there were 7 years of famine. And evidently, he has stockpiled all that grain and now is able to dispense it very efficiently. It's just, he's not letting people just go in and grab whatever they want. They actually have to buy it. They actually have to queue up and get certain amounts and then go away and come back. He has it very well organized. And allowing that the world was coming to Egypt to buy grain, it'd be nothing short of a miracle for his brothers to report directly to him to buy grain, and yet God directed the steps right to him. So I don't know how it was that they were able to talk straight to Joseph, but that just shows that God brought them right to him. Now, number three, Joseph knew his brothers. He knew his brothers. Now, what a picture this is of Israel and Jesus. the nation Israel missed Christ the first time. When the brothers saw Joseph, they didn't see who he really was. They only saw him as their dreaded favorite brother, and they hated him, they envied him, and they wanted him gone. Isn't that how they treated Jesus? Their minds were blinded. So it's kind of sad that a lot of people will miss even his second coming. Now, number four, Joseph's dreams had finally come true, hadn't they? It was then that Joseph remembered his own dreams. I wonder if he had given up on his dreams. I bet you when he was raised up as Pharaoh's second in command, do you think he went, my dream has come true? No, he didn't realize the dream had come true until his brothers bowed right in front of him.
Dreams or dream.
Dreams. His brothers bowed in front of him, and he went, that was in my dream. So I don't think he was a megalomaniac. I don't think he was all caught up in himself and his dreams. He had them, and they might have encouraged him from time to time to think God's going to use me, but he didn't live for them. And when it finally happened, he realized God did this. Now, watch this. Number B, what a situation. The brothers are there to buy food, willing to use all their resources to remain alive, and Joseph had all the resources of Egypt at his disposal. Without knowing it, his brothers declared that Joseph was Lord. It's amazing even today that folks would rather die and go to hell than bend their knees and confess that Jesus is Lord. What do you mean by that? Well, I think that if they had known it was Joseph, if they walked out of the way, that's Joseph, they would have walked away.
They wouldn't have gone to talk to him.
They would not have talked to him, and they would not have bowed. If they knew it was Joseph, they would not have bowed. That's how stubborn people are. Well, if it's Jesus, I don't want anything to do with him. He's the Lord, dummy. And that's all because God keeps some things darkened so that you have to do it by faith. Because you just have to just admit, I admit he's Lord, even though I haven't seen him, even though I may not like him, even though I may not, when I say like, meaning that I'm not, people have to realize he's Lord whether they like him or not. So just getting the idea, these guys, if God is orchestrating it so that they can bow the knee and call him Lord and not know who he is. Now, number five, Joseph's accusations, he makes some accusations. Now, why would he do that? And I give you some ideas. Joseph is thinking of Benjamin. Right? Because he looks around there, and look who's not in the crowd with his brothers. Benjamin's not there. And so he knows Benjamin's not there. What does he know? Nothing. He only knows that his brother's not there. And he wants to find out, where's my brother? But he can't ask him that way. So he's got to say, here's spies. And then they just start, no, we're true. We're honest guys. There are 12 of us. One brother's back home. The other brother, he's not. He's dead, you know. And he says, if he really is back home, I want to meet him. So we'll put you in prison until he comes. But he's calculating so that he can come along and say, all right, there's going to be some experiences here that will hopefully teach you a lesson.
So he's making sure that they didn't abuse
him. They didn't abuse him.
And if they had, he would have judged righteous judgment upon them or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. Because what was the penalty for being a spy? Usually it's death. Usually it's life imprisonment in the modern world, but it was death back then. And so they are in serious trouble. So they have to prove themselves not to be spies. But he's trying to get them to prove that they're not abusive to his younger brother. All right, so he's made it that serious. Let's see. Number six, he does what I call poetic justice. Verse 17, he puts them in prison. So there was a time in the past when Joseph was cast into a dry well against his will. Now the reverse is true. And the very 10 that kept him against his will are now kept against their will. Joseph is much nicer to them than they were to him, though. His accommodations were much more comfortable, believe me, compared to where his were. The brothers had cast him in a well and sat down to eat bread. The brothers came to buy bread now, but now find themselves in prison and their appetite is gone. There's a contrast of the 11 brothers in that room, which one of those 11 brothers, including Joseph, which one had seen the most, done the most, been his own man, lived a forced life of servitude, yet, even as a servant, a slave and prisoner, was much more a free man than all the others. There's only but one answer. Who's that? So sometimes your troubles, even though other people may not be going through the troubles you're going through, if you're following God and if you're doing things right, you'll be the better man. Joseph was his own man. He was God's man. Don't try to be a wimp. Don't try to be, you know, a rug, so people walk over. No. Let God put you through the ringer so he can make you a man. A real man, a godly man. So it always is with those who live their lives out of the will of God. They will always miss God's design for them. Their lives, a person who lives outside of the will of God, like these 10 brothers, seldom change, for they have no life. They just live. There's a big difference in making a living and making a life. The brothers have been making a living for the past 20 years. Joseph has been making a life. Apart from Jesus, we actually have no life to live. The Christian life is, I believe, anything but boring. It would be far more boring to be 60 to 80 years old, but still be living with your father and having him treat you as a child. Jacob commands his grown sons. What if I went around? Can you imagine if in my home, if Sharon and Luke still lived in our house or around us, say if Joshua and Joel, if every time I got up, I was commanding them, go buy us bread, go to the shop, what are you guys doing here, get out there into the fields. If they still needed me to command them to get out of bed, these grown 10 brothers have no life. They still are hanging around Daddy. Joseph has been abandoned and abused, and he's the better man. My point is, sometimes we feel like we're all alone and everything's just gone against us. But God is still making something awesome out of you. All right. So, number E. Look at verse 18. Joseph said unto them after the third day. There's a resurrection day. Always watch out for the 3 days. And Joseph said unto them the third day, this do and live, for I fear God. Now you're filling there as E is, I fear God. Think about it. Who is Joseph at this point to the 10 brothers? A pagan Egyptian. And what does the Egyptian say to those men? I fear God. No Egyptian would say that. That's what Reuben should have said. That's what Judah said. She was, Your Majesty, Lord, we fear God. We would never lie. But they never mentioned God. And here comes this Egyptian leader saying, guys, do this and you'll be okay, because I fear God. I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to abuse you. I don't want to take advantage of you, because I fear God. Wow, if they had said that back 20 years earlier. We can't do this, guys. That's what Reuben tried to do. Reuben tried to protect Joseph, but the other brother says, let's kill him. Let's sell him. All right. So it must have been very humiliating for them to hear this Egyptian pagan leader say, I fear God. Now, verse 19 to 20. If ye be true men, what a question. Let one of your brethren be bound in this house of your prison. Go ye, carry corn for the famine of your houses, but bring your youngest brother unto me. So shall your words be verified, and you shall not die. They got an out. I mean, he made it very clear. Do this or you'll die. What are you going to do? You're going to do the option, aren't you? And they did so. So if your words be true, he just says, bring your youngest brother back, or else you are liars and spies. Now, he's looking for a twofold witness. They said Benjamin was living. He says they got to prove it now. Now, things have really gotten out of hand for the brothers. All they wanted to do was buy some bread. They wanted to buy some grain and go back home. So, number 5, Simeon is bound and must remain behind. Joseph sent his men in and had Simeon bound before their eyes. These other 9 men knew their daddy would never let Benjamin come, give up some Benjamin, so Simeon could be freed. They knew Simeon would remain in prison until the day that he died. When they left that prison, not one of them said, Let's go get Benjamin. Do you think one of them said, Benjamin, we'll bring Benjamin back? Not one of them would have. So observe the steps that God used to get to the hearts of these men. The words of Joseph cut to their heart, saying, I fear God. His demand that they prove their words must have cut them. Their confession among themselves, look in verse 21, and they said one to another, we are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul. It's still like fresh, like yesterday to them. Remember when we saw the anguish of his soul and he besought us, he begged us that we would, and we would not hear? Therefore is this distress come upon us. I mean, look, they're talking as if it happened just yesterday. It's still fresh. Simeon being bound before their eyes, verse 24, and he turned himself about from them and wept and returned from them and commanded with them, communed with them, and took from them Simeon and bound him before their eyes. Simeon is bound before their eyes and he's whisked away. Now they are responsible for two brothers disappearing. I mean, these guys aren't your best family members to be part of. They're responsible for two brothers disappearing. The big difference this time is they had not planned on Simeon. The first one they planned on, the second one they didn't. It's almost as if God is saying, well, you all get such a big kick of having a brother bound and put in prison, I'll let you go through it again. But this time, we're going to do it my way. Let's see how your father's going to take it this time. So here's a flashback to 20 years ago when they did the same thing to Joseph, where they bound him, they cast him in a well, and then they abandoned him with no hope of deliverance.
Interesting. I thought I was wondering why they didn't put Reuben, but Reuben was away when
they were
decided
to sell him.
And Simeon was responsible, right? When Reuben was away, he was the next eldest?
I think so, yes.
The decision or whatever.
Yep.
So it seems like Joseph knew or whatever who had made the final decision on this.
And he heard. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. So we are guilty. I like how verse 21 is the beginning of at least the beginning of a change when they said, we are truly guilty concerning our brother and that we saw the anguish of his soul. When he besought us, he begged us and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us. Even though this was, God bless you, long before God issued the Ten Commandments, each of his brothers was aware of the commandment they violated from Genesis 9. Listen to Genesis 9:6. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his own blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. And that sin of murder had hung over their heads for over 20 years, and it would not go away, even though it was attempted murder. So how did such a small sin end up so enormously big? Well, it didn't get that way overnight. Number A, it started with envy. Started with envy. Secondly, it grew into hatred.
Hatred, is it?
Hatred. And was only satisfied with the death of the innocent. The death of the innocent. It didn't stop there. The longer the deed was hidden, the more people became entangled in its clutch, and the deed had to be covered by lying to the father. Once Jacob began to mourn, the rest of the family became aware that something dreadful happened to Joseph, and from the family it spread to the surrounding community. Each time Joseph's name was mentioned, guilt flooded the heart and mind of those 10 brothers. They had to live with that guilt for 20 years. One sin could and usually does affect the lives of hundreds of other people. Now Joseph begged his brothers to not let to not do him evil. Reuben was probably walking around the room telling his brothers, I told you so! But no, none of you would listen. Now his blood is required at our hands. We thought we would not be held accountable, but look at us now. God is going to exact revenge for the wrongs we have done. I think that's a pretty good summation of what Reuben would have been saying. Now the moment the brothers laid their hands on young Joseph and acted out what was in their hearts, it filled his soul with anguish. They saw his anguish. And instead of having compassion, they only hated him more. Joseph pleads with them to not harm him. They would not hear. After all, Joseph was the source of all their problems. So get rid of Joseph and the problem is resolved. Do you see Jesus here? 1,500 years later, the brothers of the Lord, the nation of Israel, envied Jesus' preferred status above their own self-righteousness. So they vented, the people of Israel vented their anger on the innocent. The rulers of the synagogue, the scribes, the elders, and anyone else that could be bought with a price unloaded a world of sin on Jesus. They believed that if they could just get rid of the beloved Son, the problem would go away. They could just keep going on in their own self-righteousness. They were so blind to sin that they could and would not see that the problem was not Jesus. He was actually the cure. Isn't that what Joseph was? Joseph was the salvation of their home in the future, of their life. The problem was Satan and themselves. But notice that Jesus didn't plead with them. The difference between Joseph and Jesus is Joseph's begging them, "God, don't do this to me." But when Jesus was bound, he didn't speak a word. They would not listen to him anyway. Even if Jesus did cry out, would they have had compassion on him? Not at all. They didn't believe his miracles. They would not even believe if Jesus stepped down from the cross. They didn't even believe him when he rose from the grave. So Jesus wasn't going to answer, wasn't going to say. Now, unconfessed sin. I have to just run across it. We've got to get two chapters done today. But unconfessed sin. These guys have lived with unconfessed sins for 20 years. How long can you live with unconfessed sin? Well, we probably, and I got it right, the problem is we think God is like us and he'll forget about our sin. Time heals all wounds. No, what you mean is people forget. Well, the only way God forgets is if you get forgiveness. Look at E there. King David thought that he and Bathsheba could sin in private and keep it that way. Yet God told him in 2 Samuel 12, "Thou didst it in secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun," out in the open. So, here, number F, it took famine to bring the brothers to face to face with their deeds. If God would use a famine to bring these men to confess their sins, why do we think he would forget about us? Do we believe he loves us more than he did them or King David? Do we want our sin to be made public? H, Joseph hears and understands everything going on. Look at verse, we'll start back at 22, I didn't read it, but there, and Reuben answered them, saying, "Spake I not unto you, saying, do not sin against the child? And ye would not hear. Therefore, behold, also his blood is required." And they knew not that Joseph understood them. Now, they're speaking in Hebrew, and they don't realize that Joseph can understand it. "For he spake unto them by an interpreter. And he turned himself about from them, and he wept. And he returned to them again, and communed with them, and took from them Simeon, and bound him before their eyes." So the brothers are speaking, you're filling his Hebrew, remember that. And they believe that the man Joseph couldn't possibly have understood. All of their infighting would normally have bring great pleasure to someone seeking revenge. Joseph, if you had been so abused and then you saw your brothers fighting, you go, "Yes, let me throw some more fuel in the fire. Let me watch them self-destruct." But Joseph goes away and what does he do? He weeps because he doesn't want them fighting. He'd like it to finally end. Number I, puts money in their sacks. Look at verse 25. "Then Joseph commanded to fill their sacks with corn and restore every man's money into his sack and to give them provisions for the way. And thus did he unto them. And they laden their asses with the corn and departed thence. And as one of them opened the sack to give his ass provender," getting food in the inn, he noticed his money. "For behold, it was in his sack's mouth," right up at the top. "And he said unto his brethren, my money is restored. And lo, it is even in my sack." And their heart failed them. Now, if you go into Tesco and you buy 50 euros worth of food and you've only got 50 euros in your pocket and you pay them and then you turn around and you go out and you reach in your pocket and the 50 euros back in your pocket, you go, "Woo! I'm a blessed man. You just go on home." And you... That's how normal people would have felt, but they feel like, how did this happen? Look at this. Their heart failed them, and they were afraid, saying one to another, "What is this that God hath done unto us?" They paid for the grain. On their way back to Canaan, they tried to feed the donkeys, and that was when they discovered all the money they had paid was now hiding in the grain sacks, and this looked bad. There was no way their money would or should have been in their sacks. It would only look they had, like they had stolen back the money and ran. That's how it would have looked. So things are going from bad to worse. Guilt is building at every step. They realize, number six, that God was doing something to them. J, trying to explain to Jacob. In verse 29, it goes on, and they came unto Jacob, their father, unto the land of Canaan, and told him all that befell them, saying, here it comes. Because, I mean, what do you think Jacob's... Where's Jacob looking? He's looking around going, where's Simeon?
So Jacob is still living.
Jacob is still living.
But old.
He's old. He dies at 100... How old does he get? 130? 130. I don't remember how long he... He'll come up here. Yeah. We'll find that in the next two chapters. So they begin to tell in verse 30, the man who is the... What do they call him?
Lord.
The Lord of the land. Key words. Spake roughly to us and took us for spies of the country. Oh, Dad, you don't know. He accused us of being spies. And we said to him, oh, we're true men. We are no spies. We be 12 brethren, sons of one our father. One is not, and the youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan. We told him just who we were. And the man, the Lord of the country, said to us, hereby shall I know that ye are true men. Leave one of your brethren. They didn't say that all of them were put in prison. They just went on to Simeon. Leave one of your brethren with me here, and take food for the famine of your households and be gone. Bring your youngest brother unto me. What do you think Jacob felt at that moment? Then shall I know that ye are no spies, but that ye are true men. So will I deliver you, your brother, and ye shall have traffic in the land. Now, which was more important to Jacob? Benjamin or Simeon? let Simeon rot. Wow. Verse 35. And it came to pass, as they emptied their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when both they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were all afraid. Jacob their father said unto them, Ye have bereaved, stolen of my children. Joseph is not, and now Simeon is not, and ye will take Benjamin away? I mean, when will it end? You're now going to get rid of a third of one of my children. All these things are against me. Jacob's got a pity party. And Reuben spake unto his father, saying, slay my two sons if I bring him not unto thee. Now, how much are you going to believe him? Kill my two sons if I'm not able to bring back Simeon. Yeah, deliver him into my hand, and I will bring him to thee again. And he said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If mischief befall him by the way in the which ye go, then ye shall bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. You'll kill me. So his life is wrapped up not with all his children, but just with one child. Can you imagine the heartache of growing up in a house like that? All of his brothers, all of Joseph's brothers, still have the same household that it was 20 years ago. They haven't changed. All right, so they try to explain to Jacob, and boy, it's just. Let me show you some pictures of Jesus in chapter 42. Joseph is the Lord of Egypt, and Jesus is Lord of this world. The whole world seems to come to Joseph to buy food. And the whole world must go before. If you want something to last, you're going to have to learn to come to Jesus. We live by prayer, folks. See, Joseph had become the Savior of the world. Obviously, Jesus is too. Joseph knew his brothers. And John 2:25 says Jesus knows all men. Nobody has to tell him what people are thinking. Joseph's brothers had misunderstood who Joseph was at first. Israel missed Jesus' first coming because they didn't recognize him when he walked among them. Same thing with Jesus. Joseph's dreams had come true, and all the prophecies about Jesus being worshipped will come true too. Joseph's brothers came to him to buy food. The entire world must learn to come to Christ for all our daily needs. Joseph had the resources of Egypt at his disposal, and Jesus has the resources of heaven.
About John 6,
I'm the bread of life. But Joseph's not the bread of life, so I'm not sure if you can...
Well, he gave bread.
I agree, but Jesus is superior because Jesus gave himself as the bread. Joseph could only reach in and grab. There's a similarity there, I just haven't even thought of it. Number I, without knowing it, the brothers are declaring that that Joseph is Lord. They didn't even realize what they were calling him. And one day all people everywhere will bend their knees and confess that Jesus is Lord. So you see the comparisons. Just, I mean, you could probably find another 20. All right, let's go to chapter 43. Which one do you want, starvation or humiliation? The famine continues to grow worse in the land, just as God said it would. The corn purchased the first time by the 10 sons of Israel are now gone in this chapter. Again, they need more grain. The Bible doesn't say exactly, but it seems that the famine was one that devastated mainly plant life and not livestock. This is evident, and the family continues to need grain. But in just a few chapters, when Joseph moves the family to Egypt, they still have livestock. So the famine is mainly with just certain types of grain. Regardless of and that's how it happens here in Ireland back in the 1800s.
Yeah.
The famine was with potatoes. They still were shipping out corn and feed grain, and they were shipping out other things. It was just with, most often, the blight was with the potatoes. So you can have a famine in a certain type of grain and not in others. So regardless of the wealth of any nation or people, God spoke through Joseph and told the world that the famine would be severely great throughout the whole world around Egypt. The famine in the days of Joseph will be nothing, however, compared to the famine during the tribulation spoken of Jesus. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. So, A, God's push. God's push. You know, a famine will move you. If there were no jobs here in Cork, if Cork just shut down all the pharmaceuticals, factories, if everything shut down, guess what happens? People move. Famine, loss of jobs, moves people, and God moves his people. This is the third famine in the land of Canaan. Look at chapter 43, verse 1. And the famine was sore in the land. It was getting very bad. This is the third famine since the Lord gave the land to Abraham. First one was when Abraham went down to Canaan and famine struck. And where did Abraham head off to when there was famine?
Egypt.
He went down to Egypt. Number B, the second time is in Genesis 26. About 97 years after Genesis 12, and God told, and Isaac experienced a famine. And where does Isaac go? Right down to Egypt. Now the third time is this one foretold by Joseph. And guess what? Those in Canaan go down to Egypt. Number two, the rest of the world didn't notice anything great or grand about those 7 years prior to the famine. You know, it's funny. I think Canaan, if you were to look at it, during those 7 years of plenty, we know Egypt was blessed with a lot of crops, but I bet you in Canaan, I bet there was a lot of prosperity. But nobody saved any of it back like Joseph did. See, the only difference between the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine was Joseph's plans to save back for the future. And no other country did that. So when the famine hit, Egypt was ready only because of Joseph. People in Canaan, people in Syria, people in Jordan, all of them starved because when you got a lot of money, guess what you do with a lot of money normally? You spend it. And it's very important to save it. Now, I find it very hard to save no matter what. But this is just a great principle. So, B, Jacob struggled. He finally accepts the inevitable. He says, you better go buy us some food. Number two, came to pass when they had eaten up the corn which they had brought up out of Egypt. The father said unto them, go again, buy us a little food. Now, why don't we use that? He doesn't want to bring up the issue. He says, give us a little bit of food. He doesn't want to talk about Simeon still back. Just go get us some food.
Is there any idea how long went by? Like,
I don't think so. It's all we know is they've gone 2 years. They're by the time that Joseph shows himself and he reveals himself, it's been 2 years into the famine. So when did they first come?
Yeah.
Say it was 1 year. Simeon may have been in there up to a year. Mm-hmm. But how much corn can you carry and then live off of?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to take all those things. They're stretching the corn. They're planting it, not getting much back. It's 6 months to a year. It takes them a month. Well, I don't know how long. How long would it travel from Canaan through the Sinai Peninsula down to No, which was the capital of Egypt, go into, how long did that take him? 3 weeks travel? So that's 2 months, a month and a half. So I'd say between six months and a year they've been away. I've never calculated, don't know. So he says, go buy us a little food. And then verse 3, Judah spake unto him, saying, of the man did solemnly protest unto us, saying, ye shall not see my face except your brother be with us. We can't go back without our brother. If thou wilt send our brother with us, we will go down and buy thee food. But if thou wilt not send him, we will not go down. For the first time he's putting his foot down to his dad. We will not go down. For the man said unto us, ye shall not see my face except your brother be with you. He says, we'll be put in jail and we'll never be released. And Israel said, wherefore dealt ye so ill with me? Why did you do this to me as to tell the man whether ye had yet a brother? Why did you tell him that? And they said, the man asked us straitly of our state and of our kindred, saying, is your father yet alive? Have ye another brother? Did he ask those things?
No.
They're trying to put it all on him. Mm. They just volunteered. When they took Joseph's coat of many colors back to his father, what did they do? Is this your son's coat? And they let him figure out what happened. And they're like talking like, we've always been honest, Dad. We've always, everybody who's ever asked us anything, we've always told them everything. Except for one thing that led to the murder of our brother. So their guilt is still playing in their conversation. And we told him, according to the tenor of these words, could we certainly know that he would say, bring your brother down? And Judah said it to Israel, his father, send the lad with me. And we will arise and go that we may live and not die, both we and thou and our little ones. So Jacob only wanted to do what was comfortable, not deal with the real issue. He didn't want to face losing his second son. Only wanted to do what was easy to do. He just go get some food. And the last thing that's recorded about Jacob back in chapter 37 was what happened when he heard Joseph was dead. And that's the last you hear of Joseph, or Jacob, until now. And he's old. He believes his son was dead. He knows that he has another son held hostage in a foreign land. There's a famine in his homeland, and all his possessions are gone. If only Jacob had been thinking of the promises of God. Even if Joseph was dead. You know what Abraham teaches? He'd see him again. And maybe if he had that kind of faith, he would have been able to let Benjamin go. But without any trust, he instructed his sons to go back to Egypt and buy food without Benjamin. And Judah protests. You know, what is Judah learning? Judah's learning, Dad, if it was me back there, you wouldn't care about me. All you care about is Benjamin. So think about the kind of home life that they're living in. Number 7, Jacob suggested that his sons should have lied the first time. Why did you tell him about us? Why would you even tell him? What do you expect us to do, Dad? Lie? Number 8, pity party. Pity party. Jacob reminds us of ourselves, I think. What kind of party is Jacob having? Who did he invite to enjoy all the festivities? Well, no one, for he is having his pity party, and so we're doing, he's forcing his depression on everyone. Jacob has been this way for about 20 years. Imagine trying to get along with him. Jacob's not thinking of Simeon held hostage, or his safety, or his welfare. He only thought of self and how much he hurt. He is simply saying, just go buy us a little food. Do not take Benjamin. Leave Simeon hostage. I don't care about you all. I just want something for my stomach. How easy are we to get along with when we are having our pity parties? How easy is it to please us? Nothing that is said or done could be satisfying. We are not even rational at these times, and neither was Jacob. The only way to get over our feeling sorry for self is to begin looking at someone else. Jacob ought to be thinking of Simeon. You know, if a church is going to win souls, they must begin thinking of others. He must increase, I must decrease, John says. If we're going to be a dominant force in our community, we must cease thinking of what we want, begin thinking of others. That's why we're here. we have church not because you're here. I'm glad. I hope you're blessed. But I get very disgruntled. I get very upset sometimes thinking about all the Christians. I don't think we should have a complaint in the world. I don't think there ought to be anybody in our church who ever looks around and sees any problems. We ought to be looking at a world going to hell and saying, we've got to make this work. We've got to be effective. Pity party, number C. Judah steps forward. This is great. Reuben tried and blew it. Why would Reuben not be listened to? Because Jacob knows about what Reuben's been doing with his concubine. Reuben's got no credibility. Yeah, you're gonna. You want me to kill your sons if you don't bring it back? I don't trust you. Judah steps forward and portrays himself as a type of Christ. And it is through his lineage that the Messiah is born. Now Judah acts as a surety. Surety. Hear the word sure in there. Surety. That's a guarantor. That's somebody who co-signs for a debt or whatever, who makes sure that a debt is paid. And that's what Judah is going to be. That's what your fill in there, number A, is. He's a guarantor. Surety is when a person steps forward, proclaims with power and authority they can bring something to pass, and all those concerned will now rely on them. So if you have two people, one person wants to buy a house, and this beautiful house they want to buy, but they only have a few bits of cash and only a dream to buy that. Well, what does the bank look for? Someone who will stand behind them and say, with all their money, hopefully they got a lot, they will guarantee it. They are sure for the loan. And sometimes it may be collateral, which is maybe, do you already own a house? Good, we'll use that as collateral. Or it's a person. And when it comes to salvation, I'm a debtor. And Jesus is my guarantor. Every time I fail, and something needs to be made up for my failure, now that I'm a Christian, Jesus pays it. That's how come Jesus is our guarantor. He is our surety. Number three... Judah is a type of Christ. These words coming from the mouth of Jesus' great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather several times removed are a living example of what Jesus promised he would do. In the ages, eons of eternally past, Jesus stepped forward and said, I will save the world. To make it happen, God set about establishing the nation of Israel as the lineage of the Messiah. This is the very theme of our present study. Over and over, God instructed the nation of Israel to have faith in him. Jesus picked up this surety and told his disciples the very same thing. So Judah is a type of Christ, as a type of Christ, will take Benjamin into Egypt and bring both Simeon and Benjamin out. Hey, Benjamin is a picture of the world. And his son... Sounds strange to me. Judah, as a type of Christ, will take Benjamin into Egypt and bring both Benjamin and Simeon out. His father could have faith in his words. Jesus told his father that he would go and redeem mankind and bring us back out. He would bring us back from being hostage. He would loose us from the bonds of sin and set us free. In him is life, and he has the power and authority to give life to all that ask. So he's our surety that we will get to heaven. Judah made a bold statement, said, I will bring the lad and set him before you. If I do not this not, then let the blame be on me forever. I don't know if I read that verse. Let's see. Was it verse 9? I will be a surety for him. Of my hand shalt thou require him. If I bring him not unto thee and set him before thee, then let me bear the blame forever. Let me be a curse if I cannot accomplish. And then verse 10, it says, for except we had lingered, surely now we had returned the second time. Judas believed him by faith. He says, you know, if you just let me have him, we'll go down there and I guarantee you, we'll be back. If you had let us go earlier, we would have him back by now. So Judas got more faith than the rest of them. Number four, Jacob's final surrender is all. He finally surrenders all. Verse 11. And their father Israel said unto him, if it must be so now, do this. Take the best fruits in the land in your vessels. Notice the famine had not affected all the fruits. and carry down the man a present. Give him a present. Don't just take money. Make sure he feels appreciated. Take a little balm, a little honey, spices and myrrh, nuts and almonds, and take double money in your hand. And the money that was brought again in the mouth of your sacks, carry it again in your hand. Peradventure, it was an oversight. It is drums. Take also your brother and arise, go again unto the man. And God Almighty give you mercy before the man, that he may send away your brother, your other brother, didn't he mention him, and Benjamin. He won't say his name. And bring back your other brother, and also make sure you bring back Benjamin. If I be bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. Okay. Number D, Joseph faces his brother again. By the way, Jacob's final surrender, Abraham had to do that with Isaac, didn't he? He had to actually say, Lord, I'll let him go. But anyway, D, Joseph faces his brothers once again. Look at the reunion, verse 15. The men took that present, took double money in their hand, and Benjamin rose up, and they rose up and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. And when Joseph saw Benjamin with him, he said to the ruler of the house, bring these men home and slay. Wouldn't it be interesting if that period, there was a period right after that? I just have to laugh. What if the interpreter was a little delayed there? Bring these home men and slay. What was the rest of that? And the guys are going, he's going to take us home and kill us. If there was a pause there, you talk about a pregnant pause. And slay, that you're going to kill the fatted calf. And make ready, for these men shall dine with me at noon. And the man did as Joseph bade. The man brought the men into Joseph's house. The men were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house, and they said, we don't deserve to be here. But something else is wrong, because the money that was returned in our sacks at the first time, are we brought in? They feel guilty. That he may seek occasion against us and fall upon us and take us for bondmen and also our asses. These guys, and they came near to the steward of Joseph's house, and they communed with him at the door of the house. This is, I want to stop here with the reunion. They've got three times the amount of money with them. They've got so much of the money with them for this second trip. And here they are. They're invited, and they says, he's just going to take everything we got. This is all the money we got. We brought our best fruits. We've come in there, and he's got us. And if we do anything wrong in his house, he's going to take advantage of us. He's going to fall on us, throw us into prison. He's going to kill us. We're ruined. Now, it's kind of funny. They're invited to Joseph's house to dine with Joseph. And what does he want with them? Maybe it's their money. They want to know what's going on in his mind. So if you look down, look at verse 20. And they said to the man, O sir, we came indeed down at the first time just to buy food. It came to pass when we came to the inn, when we left, that we opened our sacks, and behold, every man's money was in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. And we have brought it again in our hand. And other money have we brought down in our hands to buy food. We cannot tell who put the money in our sacks. And he said, excuse me, peace be unto you. Fear not. Here's another time where pagans are talking. Your God and the God of your father hath given you treasure in your sacks. It was a miracle. I had your money. And he brought Simeon out unto them. What do you think? I don't think they're breathing at this point. Why? That was a miracle of your God that put your money back in. I already had your money. We already have your payment. We know you paid.
He didn't put the money back in.
He did. Yes.
He's lying.
He's lying. But because who paid? Joseph did. Joseph paid for his brothers. So he said, I have your money, but Joseph paid for you, so here's your money back. But he doesn't attribute it to the plan of Joseph. He attributes it to God. He says, God did this for you. What a way to talk. He's still got to protect the anonymity. He's got to protect the unknown here and saying, Somebody's doing this for you, and it's God. Not to give credit to Joseph. So, and then he brings Simeon out unto them. And the man brought the men into Joseph's house and gave them water, and they washed their feet, and he gave their asses provender. And they made ready the present against Joseph, so they pull out their little gifts, you know, and all their food. Against Joseph came in at noon, for they heard that he should eat bread there. And when Joseph came home, they brought him the present which was in their hand into the house, and they bowed themselves again to him to the earth. And he asked them of their welfare and said, "Is your father well? The old man of whom you spake, is he yet alive?" And they answered, "Thy servant, our father, is in good health. He is yet alive." And they bowed down their heads for the third time and made obeisance. And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, "Is this your younger brother of whom ye spake unto me?" And he said, "God be gracious unto thee, my son." What way to talk? This Egyptian pagan man, "God be gracious unto thee, my son." And Joseph jumped up out of his chair and made haste, for his bowels did yearn upon his brother. He wanted to go and hug him, so he had to run into another room. And he sought where to weep, and he entered into his chamber and wept there. Now, why would he cry? Barry, why is he crying?
It's an emotional occasion, seeing his brother again.
Yeah, but tell me, what are the emotions that are going through his mind? What do you think, John?
Joy?
Yes, joy, but give me specifics. Why is he crying?
Yeah, just... he never thought he'd see him again.
Agreed. His brother's fine, first of all. Secondly, everything's coming right. Has he, for most of his life, all of his adult life, everything's gone wrong up until these last 9 years. But as far as everything right in Egypt, is nothing to compare with everything right with his family. And so, he's not happy that he's got food to feed the world. He's not happy. I mean, I'm sure he's happy that he's got two children and his wife is there and he's married. That doesn't cause him to weep. What causes him to weep with such great emotion is because God has done all this. The God whom I serve is awesome. And it is killing him to not just go and dump on them and pounce on them and says, "Guys, I'm okay. We're all right." He's waiting for the right moment.
What age did he become the head?
30. He was 30 years old. He left when he was 17.
Left at 7th house.
And then he's 30 years old. So now, that was 30 when he stood before Pharaoh. And that was 9 years ago. So at this point, he's 39 years old. Okay.
Okay. Like I said, the Lord initially gave me the desire. I suppose he didn't want to see his family.
He did want to see them. But mainly, you know,
at 15 years only, he saw this family again.
No, it's been over 20 years. At this point, it's actually been 22 years now.
So his father had been very old.
His father was already, you know, when his dad got married, he was 90. How old was Jacob? He was 95. Jacob, when he got married, he was 90-something.
Jacob.
He was a very old man. Yeah, wow, I was right. Sometimes when you add up these ages, you go, wow. So he's in his 130s, 140s at this point.
He lives to be 147, right, Jacob? Yeah.
Okay, all right. So he's got a few more years here, but he's coming up. I don't remember how old.
Yeah.
All right, so we keep going. Look at this. verse 31, and he washed his face. I mean, his mascara is all, you know, dripped down. I hate saying that. But he has to wash his face. And he went out and he refrained himself and said, set on bread, bring the food on. And they set on for him by himself and for them by themselves, and for the Egyptians which did eat with them by themselves, because the Egyptians might not eat bread but the Hebrews, for it is an abomination unto the Egyptians. And that's the first time the word abomination appears in your Bible. That's the first time a word abomination appears. It was an abomination to eat with people who took care of land, sheep. Isn't that funny? The Egyptians hated sheep. And God said the Israelites were to hate pigs. So if they were pig farmers, they would have been fine. because they were shepherds, it was like being a rubbish collector. Oh, I would never eat with a rubbish collector. That's how they treated them. Oh, you smell of wool and sheep. Verse 33, and they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men marveled one another. What are they so surprised at, Nathan?
He knew the order.
He knew the birth order. So the guy who's, you know, serving them says, Reuben, you're here. Simeon, you're here. And Levi, you're here. Judah, you're here. And everybody goes, Levi, you're taller than Simeon. Why? This is by age perfectly calculated. And he took and he sent messes, piles, we would say, unto them from before him. But Benjamin's mess was five times so much as any of theirs. And they drank and they were merry with him.
Must have been like an Irish stew or something. Mess.
Maybe. No, I think it was just a mess means a pile of food. All right, so. No. When it says, remember, it says set on water. They drank water.
Water, not
or grape juice. They never drank. No, they never drank alcoholic
grape
drink.
Juice. Like
it was grape juice.
Not the wine.
Not alcoholic wine.
Not alcoholic.
Yes. All right. So
it's
you're
filling in the shop all the wine bottles. When you go to some other shop, it says purely a grape juice. Is it good to drink or is it alcohol?
Well, if it says pure grape juice, then it should just be grape, unless it says alcoholic. If it says 4% alcohol, you got to stay away.
Yeah, but the bottle says it's non-alcoholic.
Oh, well, then that's okay. It might be like a sparkling grape juice. That's a good thing. Like slur is nice.
Purifying the body.
Yes, it's very good, and sometimes it settles upset stomachs and things. Okay, very quickly, under Dining with Joseph, you got AF there. For example, for him to reveal his name before they are brought to a point where they would confess, where they would confess that they've been wrong, would mean that he came to them on their terms. You see, he doesn't reveal himself until they are truly humbled, because there is still possibility they held resentment towards him. As the second in command in the land of Egypt, he would have to kill them if they still hated him, and he couldn't use them. Their hearts had to be touched so that they would come to him on his terms. You know, God doesn't come to us on our terms. He waits for us to come on his. And that's what Joseph's doing here. The pain of wanting to hold his family is so great that he must excuse himself from the presence and cry alone. One day we're going to eat with Jesus. That's my section there. We have to jump down there to number three. Benjamin's lot. His terms. His terms as you're filling on F. They cannot sit down. I jumped across D, but right about now they have no appetite. Food is the last thing on their minds as we stand before one and before someone like him and are forced to give an account for our actions. Joseph desires to have fellowship. However, they cannot sit down together, cannot break bread, cannot enjoy fellowship because there is sin between them, just like between us and God, that prevents the fellowship. So Joseph attempts to calm their fears by telling them that God was handling the situation. To prove that, he brings Simeon out to join them. And Joseph yearned for his brothers, but he could not reveal his identity until he determined some things he had to determine that they were contrite. So, and we said, number three, Benjamin's lot. Joseph sat his brothers down to a fine meal, and he sat them in the order of their birth. This fact does not escape the brothers. They marveled that he knew so much about them. They're probably whispering back and forth down the line of the 11, wondering, what kind of man is this that knows how, hey, if they know who belongs in this order, if they know, if this guy knows all about us, I wonder if he knows that we're, what we did to our brother Joseph.
He knows what we have to bring.
Yeah, but he may know about what we did to Joseph.
Right, right.
So Joseph went so far as to give Benjamin five times more than all the brothers. Uh-oh. A little favoritism in there. Okay, but isn't it an appropriate thing where he's trying to say, you know what, the one kid that you still hate, I will honor. And Benjamin here is honored. And I think Benjamin is the type of the Jews, if you can understand a little bit of the typology. I don't want to go too deep. Oh, we got to finish up. We have the 12 tribes, obviously, okay? Now, these 12 tribes are about to be all reunited. They're all going to be one again. But There's 10 of them that are anti-God, aren't they? Okay? But there's one here who's Benjamin. And Benjamin is at fault in no way. Benjamin is just a kid. He's just probably under 20. And this one kid, Joseph, honors, all right, above all the other ones. And it's just showing the Jews that, listen, don't think that because you're a child of Jacob that you're in good. You're going to have to be like Gentile. You have to become like a little child and just trust me and put up with what your brothers do against you, okay? And then one day you will be honored as he is, Joseph. As Joseph shows, we call it a favoritism, but he shows this to Benjamin because he is related. Okay? Remember, Joseph's more related to Benjamin than he is to the 10 other brothers, isn't he? So, when you get related to God, the Jews will envy you because you're more related to God than they are. Alright? So, a little bit of typology. I'm not trying to do it. Look at Joseph and Jesus compared. Is a famine always a matter of not enough physical bread? No, sometimes a famine of the Word of God. Yeah. When did Israel and Jacob find the peace that evaded him for 20 years? When he finds out that Joseph is alive. And one of the things that will change Israel is when they realize the man whom they killed is alive. When they crucify Jesus, when the Jews finally realize, that's why the Christians went around preaching, he's alive, guys! The guy you killed is alive! Because it changes the lives of those who murdered him. In Genesis 43, what does Judah do that portrays him as a type of the Lord? He makes himself a curse. And to take, bring back his brother Benjamin. Do we often find self acting like the brothers of Joseph, willing to admit one sin while covering up several others? Ethnically, it was an abomination for an Egyptian to eat with a Hebrew. What is the spiritual application here between Joseph and his brothers? That there was no way they could fellowship as long as there was sin between them. What must we do before we can have fellowship with the Lord? Be really honest. If we confess our sins. What must we do before we have fellowship within a local church body? We need to be real. Our church ought to be real, folks. Not superior, but real. H, are there consequences for us violating the Lord's memorial supper? Yes, there are. It says some of you, we read that earlier. Remember, some of you are weak, some are sickly, and some sleep because you don't judge yourself at the Lord's Supper. Is the Lord's Supper the only time we can bake bread and have fellowship with the Lord? No. Can we force the Lord to have communion with us when we harbor unconfessed sin in our personal lives? No. All right. You got an outline there on the life of Jacob. I encourage you to take a look at it, give you some ideas. I kind of have a chart there that shows you through the different wives when each person was born. I don't know when Dinah was born. We don't know, so I throw that in there. Sorry?
Did Jacob and the sons were living in Canaan, is it? And they went to Egypt to get the things.
Yes.
They are living in Canaan.
In Canaan, yes, sir.
From there, they went to Egypt to get the food from Joseph.
From Egypt and Joseph. Joseph in Egypt, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. So you can outline kind of on the life of Jacob, he was a devising brother, a deceitful son, a dreaming pilgrim, a love-struck suitor, a frustrated family man, ended up with four wives, enterprising employee, determined wrestler, enraged father, obedient patriarch, a sorrowing saint, and yet at the end a blessed man. And then you have an outline of the life of Joseph. He is the favored son, the faithful steward, the forgotten servant, the famed statement, the forgiving saint, and the fruitful shade tree, as he's told in 49 and 50. That's Wilmington. So I like those outlines. Take a look at those because it'll help you sort of have a structure to remember the details of their lives. Okay, we got to take a break and get ready for angelology.
Yeah, okay.